understand that this is not something that you've caused, but it is something that we can modify. It is driving that condition, and therefore, you know, if we can understand what that is, then we can, as you said, put that wedge into the flywheel, stop that, and then hopefully turn the flywheel the other way to improve those symptoms.
Yeah, and I think that driver really helps you think about the momentum behind it and how it's really tripping you up and getting you in your way. And by decelerating that driver, we can see real improvements with symptoms or stop that weight gain from being uncontrollable, that hair growth from being uncontrollable.
Hello and welcome to PCOS Explained, formerly the PCOS Nutritionist Podcast. I'm your host, Claire Goodwin, a registered nutritionist and exercise scientist specialising in PCOS because I have it too. Each week, we'll uncover the latest research, share inspiring stories, and provide practical tips to help you thrive with PCOS. Whether you're newly diagnosed, you've been struggling with this for a long time, or supporting someone with PCOS, this podcast is your go-to resource for empowerment, education, and community. So join us as we uncover the tools to thrive with PCOS. PCOS Explained is brought to you by our very own service, Ovi. Ovi is your go-to health service for women with PCOS. We help you improve your PCOS symptoms and prevent the long-term complications of PCOS by giving you hyper-personalized health advice based on your specific symptoms and PCOS drivers. We have a range of plans to suit your needs, from a DIY app-based program to one-on-one consultations. You choose what suits your budget and learning preference. And we offer a result-based guarantee on our Premium Plus plan, meaning that if we don't help you achieve your goal, we refund your money. Ovi is available worldwide, so it doesn't matter whether you're based in the UK, US, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, or anywhere else, we can still help you. So today we're going to be talking about what actually is PCOS, because I think this is so confusing. Gosh, it took probably has taken me, I don't know, 5 years to really understand it.
I don't think I knew much about it before I even started working at the PCOS Nutritionist / OV.
Yeah. I think though, because, you know, in our degrees, I think it's all of about half a lecture that we got on PCOS. I don't even remember it, but someone else that I did, that I was at university with, said, oh yeah, I do, we had that one lecture on it. And I'm like, God, I don't remember that.
And I think it's the same in med school. You hear the same thing from doctors too. So yeah, I think it's becoming more prominent, but yeah, let's break it down, because I think it's, until you're in the middle of it, and even when you are in the middle of it, it can feel so abstract.
Yes, yeah. And it is, but it's important because it is so common. It's so now common. The recent research showing that it's like 1 in 8 women have PCOS. So it is, and it is becoming more prominent. And I think that's going to be interesting talking about why that's the case as well. Yeah, so what is PCOS? What do we understand about that at the moment?
PCOS stands for polycystic ovarian syndrome, which we already know isn't the best name. Like, it doesn't define what's actually going on. So part of that is, I guess, the polycystic part is referring to cyst-like formations on your ovaries, right? Which technically isn't the right term. When we think about cysts on an ovary, we think about something that like pops up like a blister, right? And then has potential to burst and causes a lot of pain, which is technically what a cyst is. And that's what a pathological cyst is on your ovary. But what we're talking about with PCOS isn't that kind of cyst at all. In fact, it's not even a cyst. It's just, it's actually an internal change of, I guess, the morphology of our ovaries.
I explain it as like baby eggs or follicles that just haven't quite hatched when you didn't ovulate. That's all it is. And the only reason it got the name of polycystic ovarian syndrome is when the people who discovered it, found it, they said the ovary had a cyst-like appearance. They didn't actually call it cyst. They said cyst, but it just got translated. And therefore, it's stuck. But the international bodies have actually been lobbying to get the name changed to something a lot more descriptive of what it actually is, because like when I got diagnosed, that's all I focused on was
the ovary
or the cysts, and I was like, oh my gosh, I've got these, because I don't know, my mind went cyst, cancer.
Growth, abnormal growth in my body.
And so I was like, oh my god, I've got these things on my ovaries that are cancer-like, that are causing this testosterone, that are then causing all my symptoms, and therefore, like, I can't get in and remove those cysts in my body, so therefore I can't do anything about it. And that's so not true.
Yeah. And I think as well, like you say, the name that they're lobbying for it to change to is something around like a metabolic piece in there. So polycystic ovarian syndrome, the syndrome's correct. Like the syndrome piece, the syndrome essentially just means like a collection of symptoms that you might have some, you might not have others, but somewhere you fall onto the spectrum of having this condition or this syndrome. So that piece is correct. So it's more about maybe a metabolic
reproductive
syndrome or something like that. So that's where we're going. That's what we want you to think about this condition as, is it's more around the metabolic side, which is again something that like we might not even understand what that means, but it's essentially around how our body produces and functions with like energy in ourselves is what metabolic means. So it's more around actually energy, how our body translates these things, how our body stores or maintains weight or utilizes that energy. And then that kind of makes you, or sets you up to understand why potentially fatigue or like weight gain and those sorts of things are really affected in this condition. And then the reproductive side comes into the fertility, the irregular cycle piece.
And also too, the understanding that those reproductive hormones also then could lead to facial and body hair growth or acne, because that's also part of, they don't just cause pregnancy and periods, it also causes all the other
male or estrogen type symptoms. So that's why there's like a range of symptoms that come about, and they target quite a broad lot of things that would happen to a female body at reproductive age.
Totally. So I think that syndrome thing's really crucial to understand, because this helps us see that we're not all the same.
Yeah.
So I think we should talk about more about that. So a syndrome is, as you said, it's like a collection of symptoms that we, in a medical world, we group together to give it a name so that we understand it better. But it doesn't mean that it's the same, it acts in the same way for everybody as like a disease does, where it's, okay, you've got cancer, we know that cancer progresses in this very similar fashion for everybody, and therefore there's like one treatment or like these known treatments that will help with that. Whereas a syndrome is like other syndromes we can think about as like irritable bowel syndrome or PMS syndrome. And if anyone's ever had IBS, they would know that there is not one treatment. And often when you get diagnosed with IBS, you're like, cool, what's the treatment? And they're like, there isn't really one.
You could go low FODMAP, you could cut out fiber, you could do this,
hypnotherapy.
So it's the same sort of thing with any syndrome, is there's not necessarily one thing causing it, and there's not necessarily one outcome as well. So it's, I guess this is why when you're working with PCOS, it's so important to find the right path or the right plan for you, because your symptoms and what's causing your symptoms will differ to Jane and will differ to Sarah and will differ to whoever else down the line who's also battling with PCOS as well.
Yeah. And also too, I think the other part of a syndrome is that it's a continuum. So in terms of the like how bad or how severe people's symptoms are, can be based on where they fall on that continuum. So some people might have really severe facial and body hair growth, whereas other people might just have mild. Some people might have had no period for 3 years, whereas other people it might be this, that their cycles are like every 50 days instead of every 25 to 35. So I think that's also quite important to understand too, that not everybody is the same in terms of severity. And that's also where, why it's so important to get the right treatment for you, because you could be very different to Jane or Claire or Louise or whoever else.
And your goals potentially around what you want to see improvement in with PCOS might be different as well, because if fertility or having a baby isn't on your radar, but you still have mild facial hair growth, that's probably going to take precedent over maybe what your cycles are for you at that time. So I think that's why it's really important to recognize symptoms can be different, but also managing those symptoms, you might take slightly different paths, again, depending on what is your priority with those.
Absolutely. So that's like what PCOS is, but how do we get it?
So this
is the $1 million question, I think. And I would preface this by saying, this is what we currently know at the moment. Science is ever evolving, and so it wouldn't surprise me if in 5 years' time we have a completely different understanding about what actually leads to PCOS.
Yeah, completely. So I guess with PCOS and the syndrome, is like we're talking about, it's like this metabolic reproductive syndrome. What is happening is there is a genetic component to it. So we have, all of us are coded for different genes and things like that, but sometimes depending on just our body, the environment we're in, what happens in our life, will turn off or on certain genes. And this is the same thing with cancer. You can have a cancer gene turned on because, like, you might have it.
Like the BRCA1, you might have the BRCA1 gene, which is the like one that can predispose you to breast cancer.
Yes, and so exactly that's where someone like, say, Angelina Jolie has had chosen to have a double mastectomy because she knows she has the gene and she's at higher risk. And so to avoid turning on that gene, which is likely through just environment and things like that, she's chosen to have the double mastectomy to reduce her risk. So that's the concept of genes. We all might have a set of genes. Some people might have the gene, some people don't have the gene. But even if you do have the gene, sometimes it can be turned on or upregulated in some people. So for some people, they, and I think as well, it's again, we talk about the environment or the things that we eat and how we move and all of these things. These are big modifiers to how we can improve our PCOS. That doesn't mean to say that what we were doing previously, again, it's not our fault that we turn these genes on. So I think we need to stop and take a look at the environment we live in and be just acknowledge that the modern Western world and culture really exposes us to fast, convenient food. We are really sedentary and desk jobs and things like that. And this has all happened in the last 100 years, right?
Totally. We sleep way less.
We sleep a lot less. We're stimulated all the time by social media, by emails, the connectivity.
We're way more anxious.
So much more anxious. Again, probably because of that connectivity. Maybe our soils are more depleted. Mm-hmm. The fruits that we eat aren't even what they used to look like a couple of thousand years ago.
Most of our fruit and veggies are now ripened in a factory.
Yeah. So they're not getting the sun. It's not your fault. It's not our fault. But the environment that's created this like fast, modern paced, fast-paced world has also driven a lot of these genes to be turned on.
Yeah.
So that's, I guess, why as well we're seeing like a bigger increase in the number of people presenting with these symptoms. But yeah, so I guess this is where it's like there is a genetic component, so it's not necessarily our fault, but our environment can switch it on. So if we're predisposed to this, that potential is there to turn it on. And this is why not everybody has it, because not everyone has the genes for this, right?
Yeah, I think.
And it's not just one gene too. Yeah. Like it's, again, multiple genes and multiple variations of genes. So especially if you're genetically predisposed to type 2 diabetes, especially if you can see this in your family, maybe your grandparents have developed type 2 diabetes or your parents or your aunts and uncles, then that gene is really connected with PCOS. Mm. But some people within that genetic makeup, they might gain weight with type 2 diabetes, whereas other people don't. And again, this is something that it is often people are led to believe that you develop type 2 diabetes because you've gained weight, whereas that's actually not true. You can see there's so many examples of people that have type 2 diabetes, but they're very lean. Mm. And I just had this conversation this morning with one of our OVs, and she was like, but I'm really lean, so how could I be insulin resistant? And so I've always been told that there's no way I could be insulin resistant, and my doctors won't do the testing because I don't gain body fat. Mm. And so I think that's really important to know that there are also lots of different variations of this gene. It's not just like we can't go looking for one gene in people. It's multiple genes that predispose us to PCOS.
Yeah, it's really multifaceted. But I think, looking at like potentially what your mum, your auntie, your grandma, did they have trouble conceiving? Did they have odd or irregular cycles? Or did they have, again, some of those like symptoms that you see in yourself around like sugar or carb cravings or real sweet tooths or things like that? So I think that's the genetic component. We're never going to know exactly what our gene makeup is. That's irrelevant. We can't see our coding. We don't know. But we can look back in history and kind of be like, oh, has this affected other people in my family as well?
Yeah. And that's the thing, exactly as you said, like you can get a genetic test done. I don't think it's relevant.
Yeah.
It's like relevant. It's just knowing that what symptoms you've got now, how do we actually modify them? And this, I think, is the important thing with PCOS, is because you might read that it's genetic and you then feel really demotivated.
Doomed.
doomed, because you're like, oh, this is just my lot in life and this is what I have to deal with. But actually, that's not the case. It's like we can, as you said, switch on and off those genes just by modifying our environment. And again, you might listen to what we were talking about then, how we are set up for failure with our environment. But even within the environment we live in, we can still modify those things.
We still see people in today's modern environment living long, healthy lives and things like that. So it's not that we're doomed. It's just that know that there's been changes that have really maybe progressed the incidence of this.
Yeah.
But there's still so many ways to be healthy. And even though our fruit and veggies are ripened in factories and things like that, it doesn't mean they're not devoid of nutrients. They absolutely aren't. But yeah, they're just a bit different.
Exactly. It's just trying to explain to you that it's not your fault. Yeah. These things have happened to you. But it also means that when we shine a light on them and we understand, then we can actually look at, okay, what's going to be the things that you could change that are going to have the biggest impact on your symptoms. I think that's the empowering part of PCOS, is that we do see that it can be completely reversible in so many people. I was diagnosed 10 years ago. I wouldn't be diagnosed today because I don't actually fit the criteria of PCOS because I have reversed those symptoms. So this is, it's totally possible to improve their symptoms just through modifying a few things. And also there are some great drugs out there as well that can also improve symptoms. So it doesn't mean you just have to do lifestyle things, but the international evidence shows that lifestyle is super effective and should be recommended to everyone with PCOS.
Especially as the first port of call.
Yeah, right? Exactly. Yeah. As do that, and then also
you can layer on things. Totally.
Totally.
Because I like to think about it as sometimes we see our PCOS symptoms get worse and worse, and it's like this flywheel effect. And then what we really need to do is stick some wedges in this flywheel, which might be like some lifestyle change, it might be sleep, the way that we eat or the way that we move or things like that, to really slow down the flywheel. And then we make some more changes to get it going back the other way. So it's like changing the momentum of that. So I think we can use as many levers as we want, but there are 5 or 6 key ones that will make the biggest change or the biggest stop in getting that flywheel going the other way. But that's not to say medication or certain supplements or things like that can't help propel that momentum, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So just going back on that thing you said about Angelina Jolie, my brain just immediately went to, okay, so if she could get a double mastectomy to reduce her risk, with PCOS, could we just remove the ovaries? Especially for someone who's maybe done with having kids or doesn't want to have children, like, why wouldn't we just remove the ovaries and get rid of PCOS?
Yeah, really great question.
Like, I'm definitely playing devil's advocate.
Yeah, I guess it's not our ovaries where these things come from, right? Or the testosterone, whilst some might come from our ovaries, it's also coming from other parts of our body as well. Other glands are producing this testosterone. So we often see, even with people who have PCOS, if they have a hysterectomy, a full or partial, there's...
What's full? What's partial?
Full is the ovaries and the uterus. Yes. And then the partial is just the uterus is removed. But regardless of those things go, like for people who have had that hysterectomy, they will still see their PCOS symptoms continue beyond. So it's not a once, like it's not a fix-all, because I guess there's multiple genes, like we see it in multiple body parts that contribute to this syndrome.
Yeah, so for an example, and actually we probably haven't explained this part very well yet, which is when we were talking before about what really PCOS is that fundamentally, it is an increase in what's called the androgen hormones, which the most common one is testosterone that you might have heard of, but there are also other androgens in that family. So one other one's called DHEAS, and another one is called androstenedione, and together they make up the androgen family. And so fundamentally, PCOS is an increase in these androgen hormones, and that's the reproductive hormone imbalance that we were saying makes up this kind of metabolic reproductive syndrome that is PCOS. So that explains why you some of our symptoms can be things like facial and body hair growth, especially around like the chin and jawline, which should be more think of as places that males would grow hair, and therefore that's because we've got this maybe increase in androgen hormones. That doesn't always show up on people's blood work, so you might be listening to this and thinking, that's not me because I didn't have higher testosterone in my blood. Slightly side point, but blood tests of this hormone are not particularly accurate. We're looking at, if you have, I've seen this in many cases, a patient that has severe facial and body hair growth but low testosterone on their blood work. And it's because their testosterone's not in their blood, it's doing the actions in their body, and therefore it's not showing up in the blood. But
yeah, and we're looking at, like, I guess when you think about taking blood tests and doing these sorts of things, we're looking at one very specific finite substrate.
Yeah, and at point of time.
At that point of time, and for a lot of things, there's always metabolites of things, right?
Or how it's broken down.
How it's broken down. And so sometimes a version of that testosterone is actually present in the tissues, which is not in the bloodstream. And that's actually, like you said, where it's doing the damage.
Yeah. And sometimes it's really hard to measure that. Same thing with lots of nutrients.
You know, we're not going to take like a
yes, exactly. Yeah, cut like out,
cut
of, your
out
skin.
Of your skin to measure that. Absolutely not. Yeah.
So that's where. That's why. Just you have to just believe me in this. That is the fundamental part of PCOS. Is this
elevated
high
androgens? Yeah.
And going back to talking about then why can't we just remove the ovaries? It's actually the ovaries are only one place that testosterone or androgens are made. It's also made in your fat tissue. It's also made in your liver. It's also made in your adrenal glands. So that's why just removing the ovaries does not fix the problem. And also why going through menopause does not fix the problem. And actually, some people's symptoms get worse after menopause. Doesn't mean that you're doomed again. We can modify these things, but it just explains why we can't just remove the stuff and all the problems are fixed.
Yeah.
Then expanding on this genetic environmental part and also thinking about PCOS as a syndrome, these genes and environment that affect some of us don't affect others with PCOS, right? And this is why, like, one change could suit Tracy on YouTube and it doesn't suit you and your symptoms don't improve.
Or worsen. Yeah,
exactly, or worsen. So this is what we call PCOS drivers. These are the things that we can modify. We used to call this PCOS root cause, but I saw and we saw that by doing that, we were having the unintended consequence of making people feel like they'd caused their PCOS. We've since changed that to drivers to try and help you understand that this is not something that you've caused, but it is something that we can modify. It is driving that condition, and therefore, you know, if we can understand what that is, then we can, as you said, put that wedge into the flywheel, stop that, and then hopefully turn the flywheel the other way to improve those symptoms.
Yeah, and I think that driver really helps you think about, like, the momentum behind it and what it's doing and how it's really tripping you up and getting you in your way. And by decelerating that driver, we can see real improvements with symptoms or stop that weight gain from being uncontrollable, that hair growth from being uncontrollable, all those things. Yeah, so I think, I guess, there's kind of four drivers that we see being the most common drivers. The first one being insulin resistance. So when our body becomes more resistant to insulin's function.
So what is insulin?
Insulin is a hormone that takes the glucose out of our bloodstream and goes and delivers it to the cells that need it. So namely, muscle tissue, liver, and as well, it will store it in our fat cells too. So any kind of tissues that need blood sugar, so all of those kind of organs.
Where do we get glucose from?
From the foods that we eat. So anytime we eat something that has carbohydrate or sugar in it, that's going to be absorbed into our bloodstream and lift up what is called our blood glucose or our blood sugars. Our bloodstream is what is there to transport nutrients like glucose around our body and deliver it to all the cells. So it's like the stream of life, like the fertile, I don't know how to describe
it.
Like,
good.
That's what why blood circulates through our body, is to tap into every cell in our body and keep things going. So we eat carbohydrate that goes into our bloodstream, it becomes blood glucose, and then something like insulin comes and connects to that blood sugar to deliver it to the cells. So your muscle cells, all your organ cells except your brain, they all require an insulin to carry that blood glucose into the cell. The one organ that doesn't have that is our brain, and that's because our brain needs glucose really quickly. Insulin. So there's no barrier. The blood glucose can just pass into that. For that reason, our body is very good at maintaining our blood glucose between a certain range so that it never gets too low, so our brain is left in the, I guess, vulnerable position of not having enough energy to think and to help dictate or guide our body, but it never has too much, because too much blood sugar can start to damage our brain cells and cause things down the track as well as like immediately. So we keep our blood sugar really tightly regulated, and that's why it uses a hormone called insulin, so that it knows that it's managing that kind of blood sugar flow in and out of our bloodstream into our brain. So what we do is when we eat that blood sugar, eat that carbohydrate, blood sugar goes up, insulin is then comes out, picks up and connects that kind of the right amount of blood sugar and delivers it to those cells. When our bodies become insulin resistant, they pretty much, our cells of our body, our muscle tissues, our liver, all those sorts of organs, they say, we can't let you in, or we can't open the door, or the door's a bit jammed, it's not budging. Mm. And our body has to throw more insulin to try and unbudge that door, or like push that door open, let the blood sugar into the bloodstream. It gets a bit like worked up and a bit frantic. So the more insulin resistant our body becomes, the more insulin our body throws at the problem. It's like inflation. That insulin just doesn't work like it used to. The $1 at the dairy gets you like far less lollies than it used to. So that's the same kind of thing that's happening. And I guess what the issue with this in PCOS is, having more insulin resistance or having more insulin circulating in our body, high insulin in the bloodstream increases or elevates the production of testosterone. So that is where having more insulin or being more insulin resistant really drives those PCOS symptoms, because of the elevated androgens.
Yeah, and it acts as quite a vicious cycle as well. So the more insulin that we have, the more testosterone that we have. And if we genetically gain weight with insulin resistance, not everyone does, and that's why 75% of even lean PCOS people have this insulin resistance. But if your body is your genetics mean that you do gain weight, then you're going to gain weight with that. And then that then leads to more insulin resistance and also more testosterone, because our fat tissue produces testosterone. And then we get more insulin resistant and more testosterone and more fat like tissue as well. And so this is the really vicious cycle of PCOS and weight gain, and why in that equation, calories aren't the, like, no. I didn't talk about calories once in that equation, right? And it's not that they don't matter, but they're not the thing that's causing it.
They're not, yeah. So that's why we talk about weight gain as a symptom of PCOS, as opposed to the cause or, yeah, a reason behind you having PCOS, which is probably misunderstood.
Totally. I think that where the research is not clear, but I have a really strong opinion on this, is that some people think that people develop PCOS because they're at a higher body weight, whereas I fundamentally disagree with that. I think that we have this genetic predisposition. We therefore produce a bit more testosterone. The testosterone then makes us more insulin resistant. It also makes us gain weight. And then that starts the flywheel, and then it starts going. And so but regardless of what causes it, this is why I also fundamentally disagree with the advice to just lose weight, because people then hear that and they think, okay, I've got to cut my calories. When actually, as we just explained, calories didn't even enter into that flywheel conversation.
Yeah. And you might cut your calories, but you'll still be gaining weight potentially, when actually the case. So I think as well, one thing that we brushed over was that when you are insulin resistant or you have more insulin in your bloodstream, that insulin, because I'm here now, what do I do? Let me take some more of this blood sugar to the fat cells. We'll just store it there. They seem to take on the blood sugar a little bit easier than sometimes the muscles do, or sometimes the liver does. So we end up finding higher circulating insulin can cause a lot more shunting of the blood sugar just into our fat cells for storage. It's like, just sweep it under the rug, put it in the fat cells.
Deal with it.
Just get rid of it. But what that does is, sometimes we have that too much insulin there. That might shunt away too much blood sugar. And all of a sudden, even though we ate carbohydrate-rich foods maybe only an hour, 2 hours ago, we're desperately hungry. We might feel agitated. We might have huge sugar cravings, have all of those like low blood sugar feelings, even though we only just ate. That's because we've moved that too much insulin has caused us to dip below that like healthy blood sugar range, which our brain likes, and our brain's sending all these signals saying, it's too low now, fuel back up again. So we can find this like shuttling almost of glucose bypassing the cells that need it, muscles and liver and things screaming out for that kind of blood glucose, and it's just getting put straight into our fat cells.
Or the other feeling that we might have is not being hungry, not experiencing any of those low blood sugar symptoms, but being incredibly tired,
yes,
incredibly fatigued, and this is why, because those muscle cells and everything else are screaming out for energy. They need it, but it's just going straight to those fat cells.
Yeah.
Or not to the fat cells, but still not being, and this is why maybe some people don't gain weight with PCOS, but it's not being utilized by by your body properly for energy the way that it should be. And this is why it's so important to really understand the fundamentals of how your body is working so that we can actually put the wedges into that flywheel and then start to reverse that so your symptoms improve.
Yeah.
So that's just, so the weight gain is the one example we've used there, but obviously if you, many people have different symptoms like irregular cycles. And so the way that testosterone and insulin can affect this is that by disrupting your sex hormones that actually cause your body to ovulate. So if you're getting an irregular period, this means that you're getting a bleed less than every 25 days or greater than every 35 days. What this means is that your body is not ovulating as regularly as it should be. And what that means is that your body is actually trying to ovulate more than once in that cycle. So if you've got, what happens is if you've got higher testosterone and higher insulin, is that your body will try to ovulate and then it just won't be able to. And this can be a couple of reasons. One might be that the egg is just not quite the right size, it's too small, and therefore your body's, you didn't make it. Or in PCOS, also the other common thing is that the hormones that help your body to ovulate are just not firing at the right time or too much. And I like to think about this as like a sports team. So our hormones are like a sports team that work together to score a goal, right? The goal is ovulation, literally kicking that egg out into the fallopian tubes, ready if there is sperm there, waiting to get pregnant. Not that you want to get pregnant every month potentially, but that is the goal of reproduction. And all those players in the sports team, they have a specific job. Just like you can think of any sports team, is that it might be that they're the ball carrier or that they're the defender, and that they, in a really high performing team, they all are doing their job perfectly. And that's the same as a menstrual cycle. But in PCOS, it's just like we're a team that's at the early stages of becoming a team or something. They're just like the ball carrier's not in the right position and misses the ball, or the person who's supposed to be defending and taking out the defense is just like mindlessly watching the crowd or something like that. And so we're just missing things, or we're a bit injured, and so it's just not firing correctly. And so we'll have to attempt multiple times to score that goal. And the causes of this are those hormonal disruptions, especially when we've got higher insulin or higher testosterone, then that causes these.
Kind of think about it like maybe insulin and testosterone are getting your team drunk. And
then true.
Then so just true. Really affecting the finesse of your team's work. Just coming in and disrupting, and everything's just kind of going shit.
Exactly. And so old mate defenders over there just like looking at the crowd and like having a great time dancing away, and like ball carrier, same thing. He just like tries to go and catch the ball and he doesn't, he completely misses. They've caused that disruption. And so what we need to do is we need to actually get those, like it should take them one attempt to ovulate, and it actually takes them 10 times because they're like so drunk that they can't even catch the ball. So that's the same thing that can happen in your body. But it doesn't mean that we can't sober those hormones up, right?
Yeah.
Like we just need to take away all that insulin and testosterone, we sober the hormones up and we get them firing at the right time. And we might not be able to sober them up immediately. It might take us a wee while.
Yeah.
But it gets there. But it just shows that you're not infertile, like you're not missing any sexual organs. There's nothing that is like permanent. It's just a hormonal imbalance, or those hormones being a bit drunk, and we just have to think about sobering them up and getting them working back the way that they should be.
Yeah, completely. So I think that, and again, these are just two examples of how insulin is coming in and disrupting things. But yeah, it's a key driver, and I think we really just, if that is one of your drivers, then that's something that we really need to focus on and work to improve. And
And it is, we talk about it first because it is the most common. It affects 80% of people with PCOS, so not everybody, but a significant amount. And so as I said before, even if you're lean, so 75% of quote unquote lean PCOS, which I think is a like terrible term. I don't think it means anything about
yeah,
what's
it's
going
a really
on.
Old-fashioned term. Yeah. People will come to me, some clients will go, but I'm a lean PCOS, can you still help me? I'm like, oh, I help you the same.
Yes,
no matter
exactly.
Your body size. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. It's so irrelevant.
Yeah.
In that respect, it doesn't tell us anything about what's driving it and therefore anything about what's going to work. Because I think that's a huge misconception, is the fact that if I don't gain body fat, then therefore there's nothing that can help me in terms of lifestyle. And that's just not the case at all.
Yeah.
And we've covered Insula now. We've hopefully really delved deep into that one.
Painted a real nice picture.
Yeah,
of
your drunk hormones.
Of your drunk hormones. The insulin drunk hormones.
The other drivers, the next most common, would be stress hormones.
Yeah.
So this affects about 50% of people with PCOS, is what the current research is saying.
Yeah, and I think, again, it's not just thinking, oh my gosh, my work is so busy, I'm a stressed person. It's more thinking about what both physical and mental stresses are we putting on the body. So for some people, they might have a really relaxed job, or they might not necessarily even have like work a 9-to-5 or whatever it is that they do, but they might exercise like 2 or 3 times a day, and that is a stress on the body. Or they might not potentially be eating enough for what their body needs, and that is a stress on the body. So there are more than just feeling stressed or anxious, although that typically plays into it. Like for most people presenting with the adrenal or the stress component happening in their PCOS, typically as someone who maybe is just prone to anxiety, feels a lot more stress, has those sorts of anxious emotions or heightened emotions sometimes can come into it too. What's the chicken and the egg? Don't really know, but it's not just that you have to be an anxious person or feeling stressed for this to be a driver for you.
Yeah. So. And conversely, just because your work might be quite stressful and you can't necessarily modify that, doesn't mean there's nothing we can do.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's a conversation I had this morning, and she was like, I'm a journalist. I cannot change. I've got to meet deadlines. There's nothing about my job I can change. So therefore, does that mean I can't be fixed? And I'm like, no, like we can absolutely change so many other factors. Okay, where else is your stress bucket being filled in your life? Like exercise or caffeine, or maybe even just how you perceive that stress. And
even sometimes acknowledging that it's okay to be under stressful situations, and that our body is really resilient and stress does help us adapt. But really, sometimes the perception or the mindset we can create, sometimes our thoughts and feelings can sometimes get so hooked or ruminate on things, it generates more of that stress. So there's so much mindfulness work. There's padding we can do around having a stressful job, or maybe raising young kids, or things that we can do to try and help minimize, like you said, your stress bucket, because it's only when too much is in there and it's overflowing, that's where we really see PCOS take hold. And that's because there's this adrenal component.
So, I was going to say, we skipped over how it actually works, because that's the thing. How I understand that necessarily stress can be a negative thing, but how does it actually work in PCOS?
We see that when people say, live a stress-free life and you'll live a long, happy life. And it's like, why? But yeah, it's because, like I said, our bodies can handle and cope with some stress hormones. Like in an acute phase, right? It's the same as getting a swollen ankle. Our body causes inflammation to deal with and fix the problem, and then it all just goes back down and dissipates again. So we're used to these like acute like bursts of stress hormones. Where it can start to be, I guess, more damaging for the body sometimes, or more cause some of these more long-term symptoms, or PCOS symptoms in this case, is if we're under chronic high stress. So our body's constantly producing like an excess of these stress hormones, right? So our adrenal glands are our glands in our body that produce these stress hormones like cortisol and adrenaline and things like that. And when that adrenal gland is constantly under the pump, essentially, byproducts of this cortisol or adrenaline production is these androgens as well. Mm-hmm. So the more production happening on our stress hormone end, the more production happening on our testosterone end. And so that's causing that elevated, well, it's not really testosterone, it's more another type of androgen that's getting elevated through that stress signaling pathway.
Yeah. And the double whammy effect on that is that when we are stressed, our body thinks that we're going to have to get away from the threat to our life, because that is still how our body interprets stress. It still thinks that there is an actual physical threat to our life. And so it's, you're going to have to run or jump off this balcony or get away from this physical threat. So in order to do that, it has to release some of that blood glucose, the river of life, into our...
Gosh, I can't ask some interesting phrases.
The river of life river to of our body, so our muscles can use that to get away from this physical threat. And then if we have the insulin resistance, as you just heard before, it can't necessarily even use that for our muscles.
Deal with it.
And so it's then causing this higher testosterone. So we then get that double whammy effect. And this is why we see so many people, including myself, have the combination of the higher stress, like adrenal kind of part of PCOS, higher insulin part of PCOS, and then both of them are affecting. So
it's
both are driving.
It's a winning combo for PCOS, isn't it? Yeah.
Such a winning combo.
I think the other piece as well around the stress piece is, and we don't really know 100% how this works. It's same in science. We don't know everything. But essentially, we do see that when our body is under stress, it will, in some sort of primal way, shut down our ovulation as well.
Make it less likely we're going to get pregnant. It affects the progesterone production, and so we get like a shortened second half of our cycle, which means that makes it really hard to get pregnant. And yeah, as you said, the most insane primal, but it just shows how perceptive our body is. That if it thinks that we're under danger and therefore we're not going to live ourselves, why would we bring a baby into the world?
It's a liability, right?
Yeah.
Have a pregnant baby or then to have a
pregnant baby.
Pregnant baby.
Be pregnant with a baby while we're trying to.
While you're trying to run away from a line or two. Or I think another way to think about it is in the old times, if you were like coming into a famine or something like that, particularly lower energy intake or not enough energy intake, which sometimes when we're stressed, we almost demand more energy. So sometimes that might drive that energy imbalance, which kind of says, now's right, not a right time. We're going to shut down ovulation as well. So.
Yeah, shut down ovulation or make it hard to get pregnant by reducing that progesterone. And I mean, it's phenomenal though that this was before we had condoms, before we had hormonal contraception. Like this was the only, apart from timing intercourse in our cycle, and this was the only form of contraception that we had. And it's pretty amazing. Like it was pretty effective at saving us from when we didn't have enough energy for two humans.
Yeah.
So that's how it can affect fertility side as well as then affecting the PCOS. So you can have, again, a bit of a double whammy where you might have two of those things that are affecting your fertility or your cycles.
I think another piece as well is that we sometimes... people can associate this like stress piece with lean PCOS, which isn't actually the case. We can be stressed in any body shape or size and that can still be a driver for our PCOS. And sometimes even we see the stress component kind of drive mid-band belly, like what we call belly fat as well. And so I think you might be presenting with a lot of symptoms around like fatigue or sleep disruption is a huge one. And you might still be seeing that mid-band kind of weight gain as well, but you might not have insulin as a driver. But don't discount that stress can do these things too, like you said, for, you know, dumping blood sugar unnecessarily into our bodies, affecting our sleep, which is like a really key part of keeping our body healthy essentially. And
does our genetics play a role? We just talked about how genetics play a role in the insulin side. Does genetics play a role in... I think that, not that I'm super familiar with the genetic research on adrenal side, but I feel like if you have a family history of anxiety, then that could play a role. But also one thing I do know is that it's not necessarily genetic, but maybe we do know that people that are, women that are exposed to lots of stress pre-going into puberty do tend to have a slightly lower stress tolerance later in life. And a doctor gave me a really good example of this. He said to me, Claire, everyone carries a stress backpack, but just the size of backpack differs between everybody. So some people are more resilient to stress and therefore they have a bigger stress backpack. They can deal with more stress. Others, they can deal with less stress. And part of what determines that can be the stress that you're under pre-puberty. So we do see people that maybe had a really stressful time. Maybe there was a family breakdown or they were doing a lot of intense sports. Especially I see it in swimmers and gymnasts. And especially those in weight-dependent sports like gymnasts, that they then may be more predisposed to stress affecting them later in life.
Yeah, and I think as well, just to follow on from that, there's so much that we're learning still about like intergenerational trauma and like how that plays a huge role in, say, our stress backpack, our like ability to maintain stress. Have we already got a baseline half full backpack when we start life? Again, I know another really great book is The Body Keeps the Score. And that is a lot about as well trauma and things like that and how our body, our physical body can change in response to traumas and things like that. So there's so much being explored in this field, and I think we're going to uncover so much more in the next 10 years, which is like the exciting part as well. But
yeah,
I think don't discount some of these things contributing or predisposing you maybe to being.
And I think that it's really helpful when you view it in the way of, this does not mean that I am doomed because of something that wasn't in my control, a family trauma or something in my early years, or that my ancestors were survivors of the Irish potato famine, which is absolutely my heritage. That does not necessarily mean that I'm doomed. It just means that now that I'm aware of that, I understand and I can give myself grace about why my body might respond in a different way, or why I might feel like, man, Sarah can run a business with five small children and like being a single mum, and yet I struggle with one child. Like, it's that.
And I think as well, like, you think about the potato farmer thing and you're like, well, how does that, was like two generations ago, how does that affect me? But it's like genes and things were turned on or turned off during that time, which may have passed down to you as well. So I think, or yeah, don't discount, whilst we can't change our whole body makeup to be fully equipped to deal with the modern life, that doesn't mean there haven't been adaptations that have happened over this time, or what trauma or what environments that you've been in have changed or modified the genetic piece.
Yeah. And we've definitely seen this in the research, that Irish potato famine research is like quite really interesting, and it does definitely show that those people, I'm sixth generation New Zealand, but my ancestry on my dad's side especially is, we did a genetic test for him, so he's fifth generation New Zealand, and he is still 90% Irish, which is insane. Like, they basically just came to New Zealand and bred within the Catholic Church, within this small part of called South Canterbury, and which is just, so I know that I have that really strong heritage, and we know that is, that those genes were turned on to help them survive during that time. There's also really interesting research around the Dutch, similar thing, where they, there's a famine in there as well, but and same thing with World War II survivors. It's really interesting, and I think that just so long as you take the perspective of, this is interesting, how do I then use this to understand my body more and then work with my body rather than against it? Yes. And that's exactly what we're helping with in OV, is you to understand your body and to work with it to make changes to help your body rather than constantly fighting it like you may have been doing for the last 10 years.
I certainly was. Completely.
So the next one we talked about, you actually did mention a bit about inflammation before when you gave the example of your ankle and how you sprained your ankle. Your immune system sent all of the immune, like your white blood cells and different things there to help to heal that, which one, the first part of that was inflammation to immobilize that. So that's inflammation that we might know of, but how is that working in PCOS? Because this is another one of the drivers, is chronic inflammation.
Yeah, so I guess with chronic inflammation, it's, again, there are going to be things that maybe our body isn't responding too well over time, and we can deal with so much of that. We can deal with, our body's pretty resilient. It deals with, think about how much alcohol we might put in our body on a night out, and our body can still deal with that. Our body's pretty resilient, but constant exposure can start to wear down our body, or the amount of immune cells that have to come in and, I guess, for want of a better word, clean up some of these things that we put into our body or that happen to our body, can just get too much over time, and we can just start to build up this like low grade chronic inflammation where we just have this chronic long term exposure to higher amounts of inflammatory cells than we probably want to. So that can come about, again, environmental things like toxins or food additives or sometimes high sugars, sometimes just being more insulin resistant can drive up that inflammation cells as well. Sometimes gut issues can that drives up a lot of inflammation because there's a lot of damage that might be happening in the gut, which causes more inflammation. So many things. Inflammation is like widespread through our body and will happen when our body needs to try and get back to normal functioning. But yeah, over time, the more exposure to some of these things that are going to be inflammatory for us can just cause a constant exposure to these inflammation cells. And that those inflammation cells, while they're helpful, sometimes when they're there too long or doing around too much, they can start to cause damage on their own, yeah, or stop our cells from working, or our body working at its best, at its most optimal.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you think about your swollen ankle, like that can be what's happening internally to different parts of your body and your cells. You can't see it like you can an ankle, but think about it like that. And think about that when it's happened just once for a couple of days, that's fine. But if this is constant ongoing for like months and months, it's easy to see how that could then be damaging to your body.
And it's affecting how you walk, and it's affecting that you can't do all these things. And that's the same sort of thing, as that low-grade inflammation might be affecting how your body processes energy, or how it
absorbs your vitamins and minerals, exactly. And so I think what you said then about how insulin can cause inflammation is also, like we were saying before, it's really common to have that high stress and high insulin because they both work together. Same thing, super common to have high inflammation and insulin resistance because that insulin causes the inflammation. So it is, I would say, probably the second most common thing. Or you can even have all three. You can have high inflammation, high stress, and high insulin resistance.
Yeah, and I think I tend to, I guess the way that, I don't know if we've never talked about this, but the way I view it is, typically there's either it's predominantly stress, predominantly insulin, or both. And then typically, whilst it can be, you can have just inflammation as a driver or just thyroid as a driver, we typically see people presenting with these are secondary drivers.
Yeah, so it's like a hierarchy. There's almost like there can be one really predominant one and then secondary one. So yeah, I think that's a really good way of thinking about it too.
Is it the chicken or the egg? Sometimes the inflammation. Sometimes it might be a byproduct of the other drivers that are in hyperacceleration mode can drive some of these things. So yeah, I guess that's where inflammation as well, it can show up in skin rashes or skin conditions, it can show up in IBS or like gut issues. Sometimes it could be driven by you not being able to digest a food as well. So sometimes for some people that might be gluten or dairy, they have real trouble digesting some of those foods, so that can drive up inflammation. People might have more of a histamine reaction. Inflammation, think about it as a really broad thing, and pretty much anything that kind of is not promoting health in our body or doing damage is causing inflammation. So that's where I think about it, is that's why it's typically secondary, because it's typically we're seeing inflammatory symptoms present because something else typically isn't functioning as best as it could in the body.
And this is exactly what we do in OV, is actually work out what are these things for you, and is it the primary thing or is it the secondary thing, right? Because
and
you might be listening,
be the biggest lever?
You're going to be listening to this potentially and thinking, oh my God, like I feel like I fit them all. Like I have like
and
joint
not
pain. It's not uncommon. You might be like, I've got joint pain, so I've definitely got some inflammation, but I've also can resonate with a lot of those high stress symptoms and the insulin symptoms. Oh my God, this is just way too much and overwhelming. And that's where we can tell you, okay, what's the primary thing and then what are the secondary things, and then our job is to tell you what are the four or five most important lifestyle changes and or medications for you to actually fix those symptoms. And again, thinking about the like lifestyle changes as the part that's going to be the, we think, is really important in first line, and then the medications as the additional things that you can do depending on how you feel about medications. If you're anti-medications, that's absolutely fine.
Yeah,
lifestyle changes. If you're open to those, we can give you some suggestions as well for medications. So that's our job in OV, is to tell you, okay, this is the driver and these are the changes, or these are your drivers and therefore these are the changes.
This kind of, based on what you've presented with, these kind of like rankings of lifestyle changes are going to be what's going to make the biggest, most effective impact for you.
Yeah. So it's not, you've got this and here's the 20 things you need to do. You need to remove gluten and dairy and onions and garlic, and also you need to sleep 12 hours a night, and you need to, that's not what we do. We're like, okay, here are the four to five maybe six things, but here's the most important thing you should do this week.
Yeah.
First thing, it's like a bit of a tick list. Okay, got that done. Now we move on to the next thing.
Yeah, and you can know that you're like, whilst they might not seem like big changes, they're big changes for you. They're going to be the changes that are going to have the biggest impact. Yeah. So yeah, that's kind of inflammation. Then the fourth one is thyroid, which is, this is when I see thyroid pop up, that's one thing that I really want to tackle first and foremost as well, especially if I think about working with someone one-on-one. If I can see some thyroid symptoms popping up, I want to tackle that, even though it's probably not necessarily what we'd call the primary ones, like we've said, stress might be. Until we can get your thyroid functioning better, we often won't see it as immediate change, or that could be a real anchor dragging you back. Your thyroid is a gland that kind of sits near your throat. It's like a butterfly-shaped gland, and it produces all of these hormones to essentially make your body metabolize. It's like your metabolic driver, essentially. And so we often see in PCOS that this is not, we're not producing enough of these thyroid hormones, and that's slowing metabolism is typically the way we see it. Hyperthyroidism or clinical
low thyroid.
Yeah, low thyroid function.
So you think about it as not producing enough thyroid hormone. Yeah. And if it makes sense, if you're not producing enough thyroid hormone, your metabolism won't work as fast. You might gain weight, you might feel really tired, you might start to lose hair because your body doesn't have enough energy, and that's the last thing we need. It's not essential. I need to focus on all the other things like a beating heart and breathing and an immune system.
Yeah, and another one that typically people struggle with, especially if you're trying to fall pregnant, if the thyroid piece isn't as optimal as it could be, that could be a real roadblock to a healthy pregnancy or conceiving and things like that too. Maybe it's affecting ovulation entirely. So yeah, I think that's a really important driver to acknowledge. And I think that's one thing I would say a bit cockily. We have quite a good, we are really able to help people recognize if their thyroid's not working as optimally as possible. Whereas I think in hospitals and in the typical medical system, the threshold for being having clinical hyperthyroidism is quite high, which is understandable. If we all were presenting with minor differences with our thyroid, probably overwhelm the medical system as well. Some people might not be able to manage if they put your medication and you went too far the other way, like that's also damaging. So I think there's very real reason for these doctors and medical centers and things to be concerned about treating thyroid conditions when they actually need to be treated.
Yeah. But, and therefore having a really conservative, normal range.
Yeah, exactly. But what we can do is look at not just what your blood tests are doing, although they often show that there's still elevation in something called your TSH, which is the marker of your thyroid's not. If your TSH is high, it means your brain's on the accelerator saying, speed up, thyroid. Like, that's what it's doing. If we can see typically that's pretty elevated, almost at the kind of clinical ranges, but also we really look at the symptoms of that as well and what's happening in the thyroid space to help you understand, is this being a bit of a roadblock, and how can I tackle this to continue to see improvement? So yeah, I guess that's the fourth main driver, and really common too. Like, we see probably, I know the research says about 1 in 4 women with PCOS, but I personally think I see that higher.
Yeah. And that's the other thing too, is that we're not just looking at the like the TSH, but we're also looking at thyroid antibodies, which is how your, like, whether your body is basically attacking your thyroid hormone. And that's also about 25% of people with PCOS have thyroid antibodies as well. Yeah, I think that, think about the, if you've got a thyroid test and your doctor might have said it's all normal, just think about that. Okay, that reference range is basically the same for every person, whether they're 2 years old or whether they're 80 years old, whether they're male or female. And there is a completely different normal reference range for women, especially those wanting to conceive or in the first, like, trimester as well. And so we look at this, we look at you as an individual and say, is this optimal for you and what you're trying to achieve, rather than, oh, this is just the reference range for every single, like, human on the, on the planet. And also too, are your symptoms normal? Are you cold all the time? Is your temperature in the morning super low? Because that's a really clear sign as well. So,
are you struggling to lose weight, which I know is a symptom of some of the other drivers, but that's also going to be probably a roadblock in that journey if that's something that you're working towards. Yeah, there's so many things. And I think It's an interesting one. At the moment, we see less change maybe from lifestyle, a lot more change from medication, and this is why we're so agnostic to medication. Like, medication can be so valuable, and particularly in thyroid conditions, it is a thyroid like hormone replacement that you're taking, and I take it every day because I have a thyroid condition, and it's just one of those non-negotiables.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is actually, it's a really, actually quite a natural medication. It is replacing your thyroid hormone. And yeah, therefore I think that understanding, because a lot of people say, oh, my goal is to get off thyroid meds. And I'm like, why? Mm. Like, why? And it's often a misunderstanding that they think that the thyroid medication is bad because it is a medication, but actually not understanding that it is literally just topping up your body's own levels. It's not changing something else in your body that's artificial or anything else. So I think, yeah, just understanding a bit about that can be really helpful in understanding why it's a good thing. It's a good medication, and therefore what it's actually doing for your body.
Yeah.
So there's lots of other things that can then also play a role, like how many nutrients your body has, like your vitamin D levels and your iron levels and your B12, and those are all, like, again, in the hierarchy, can be a little bit lower or can be a bit higher in some people, depending on what the problem is. So we look at lots of different things, but when we're deciding what are the most important things for you to change, or therefore what medications are going to be effective for you or even necessary for you, that's when we'll look at these drivers and then match you with the right treatment plan, which is what we do in OV.
Yeah.
If you're finding value from these podcasts, then we'd be so grateful if you could hit follow on the PCOS Explained podcast. This means that not only you'll get the latest releases, but also that other people are more likely to find this podcast. That's the way the algorithm works. And we all know how important it is to get good information about PCOS. So if you can hit that follow button, it means that people with PCOS that don't know that this podcast exists are more likely to find it. So thank you so much for your help there. Now stand by for our disclaimer. The information contained in this podcast has been prepared for the purpose of providing information, including about the PCOS Nutritionist products and services, and is designed to support clients' overall wellness. It is not intended to provide medical advice or designed to rectify, treat, or cure any specific medical conditions or diseases. Nothing stated or shared in our podcast is intended to be and must not be taken to be medical advice. Please seek the advice of professionals as appropriate regarding the evaluation of any specific information, opinion, advice, or content contained in our podcast.